woman. And when you travel, they say, put the mask on yourself first, and then take care of the small children or elderly that you're traveling with. Today, women, you are putting the mask on yourself first and taking care of yourselves. So give yourselves a round of applause for taking care of yourselves. This breakout session, Living with Intent, your guide for moving from action to outcome, is an amazing hour with Malika Chopra, the founder and CEO of Intent.com and the author of Living with Intent. And she and I were just talking. I love that it has the title, in the title, Messy Journey, because it shows humanity and this journey that we're on, the chapters as they unfold, some of them can be messy. So she found herself buried in to-dos, out of balance, and with increasing feelings of taking on too much, but somehow not doing enough, a feeling that I know I have on a daily basis. And as the daughter of spirituality guru Deepak Chopra, she has been steeped in questions of purpose, fulfillment, and enlightenment for her entire life. In her journey to find more meaning, to regain joy, and restore balance to her life, she penned this book, a chronicle of her successes and failures, as she simply sought to achieve what we're all looking for, a purpose, living out loud, living intentionally. And I had the opportunity early this morning, to watch a few of her TED Talks. She's the mother of two beautiful girls, Tara and Leela. And very funny and witty. I found myself actually laughing out loud, downloading her app, following her on Facebook, connecting with her on Twitter, looking for her on Instagram. So we are now joined at the hips. So ladies, I ask you to please give a wonderful Texas welcome to Malika Chopra.
Thank you.
Good morning. It's so much fun to come to these conferences. My favorite thing in the world is women's conferences. I speak at many places, but when you're with a group of women, and sometimes there are a few men here, you can be kind of more relaxed, etc. So I have to confess, in my typical messy journey to come and talk to you about balance and purpose and having it all together, I arrived here with no makeup, with no jewelry. I forgot deodorant, and so I got it from the hotel. And so when I got here, and they had this makeup woman there, I was like, oh my God, you're such an angel, because I was looking kind of a mess. So I am excited to be here. I'm going to share basically some of my stories. I want to try to get through two exercises together, exercises that I kind of came up with while I was writing this book. But I'm going to start off with the first question that I inevitably get. So I'm just going to save the question and just answer it, because people always ask me, what was it like growing up as the daughter of Deepak Chopra? So I have one younger brother. My brother and I really don't know anything else but growing up in this family. But I will tell you that when we were young, our earliest memories are actually pretty stressed out. My parents were immigrants who came to this country with $8. They had just got married, and at that time, that was all you could bring into this country. And my dad came here to do his residency. So he worked 24/7. My mom was a stay-at-home mom with me and my brother, and frankly, whenever my dad came home, which was very rarely, just to be able to sleep and to relax, he used to drink, he smoked incessantly, and he was in a bad mood. And so my parents would fight all the time, and my brother and I just had these memories of, like, we didn't want him around. And so when I was about 9 years old, something changed dramatically. My dad came home and he seemed relaxed and happy. And so he had actually that day walked into a meditation studio or place, and he, for the first time in his life, actually meditated. Now, my family in India was a very Western-focused family. There was no sense of spirituality really in our family. So when my dad did his first meditation, he felt a sense of peace and connection and just quiet and relaxation. So when he came home, he took my mother right away to go and learn meditation. Now, my mom is a very kind of balanced, grounded woman. So for her, meditation just felt like coming home. The next day, my brother and I learned how to meditate. So I was 9 and I'm 45 now. So I've really been meditating my whole life. And the day after that, my dad made his brother and his whole family learn. The day after that, my mom's sister and their whole family learned. And before you knew it, the entire Indian community in Boston had to learn how to meditate. And so my dad just had that personality from the beginning. But for us, meditation was really a gift for our family, because for the first time, actually, we noticed that my parents weren't fighting all the time, that my dad was kind of around more and happier. And for the first time, he'd look at my brother and say, oh, so what grade are you in? As take an interest in our life. And then the journey really for him began there. That being said, my brother and I basically were the guinea pigs for all of his experiments. So it started with meditation, but then he would literally do everything. We used to have a Ouija board and like play on that. He hypnotized me to get over my addiction to chocolate, which was a complete and total failure because I'm still completely addicted to chocolate. He'd make us do memory tricks and perform for people, which horrified us. But one of the things he also taught us was this concept of intention. And that, as I'll talk about, has been a very powerful thread in my life. So after our meditation, he would make us often repeat this phrase. It says, I am responsible for what I see. I choose the feelings I experience and set the goals I will achieve. And everything that seems to happen to me, I ask for and receive as I have asked. So then my dad would ask us, what do you guys ask for? So obviously we'd ask for tickets to the Celtics, a trip to Hawaii, new clothes, a new Atari game. There were so many things to ask for. And my dad would listen patiently and then he'd say, okay, but what about asking for love, connection, inspiration, a sense of purpose? And we were taught as children on a daily basis to ask for the qualities in our life that could make us happier, healthier, more connected, and of purpose. And so that's really what intents are. You know, goals come from the mind. They have an end goal, and, you know, that task list that we all get consumed by. But intents come from the soul. They come from that deepest place when we ask ourselves, who am I, what do I want, and how can I serve? And so I feel very grateful, actually, that, you know, I was gifted the sense of setting intentions when I was a young kid. That being said, this world of my dad's, frankly, my brother and I really couldn't care less for it growing up. We went to kind of great schools, and when it was time for me to find a job, I thought, okay, what is the coolest job that I could find? And this was in the early 90s, and MTV was just launching. And so I set a very clear goal. We had grown up with Michael Jackson, actually, knowing him, and I had helped Michael create the concept of the Heal the World Foundation. And through that, I had seen the power of music and media to affect change around the world. At 23, there was nothing cooler than to go work for MTV as my next step. And I was able to convince them at a very young age to send me to India to be the first representative for MTV. I told them, oh, my family's totally connected. I can speak Hindi. You know, I know all this stuff. I was 23. I couldn't speak Hindi. I didn't know anyone. But I was able to convince them. So I had this amazing opportunity where I was the first one for the channel in the country before they launched. And I really got an in-depth dive into all aspects of business. So from business development to marketing to satellite distribution, to my favorite, which was doing a video for No Doubt in the streets of Delhi. It was really the dream job. My business card could get me into any nightclub. And I actually met my husband at the first ever rave in New Delhi, a very non-Chopra-esque type of meeting. And so, life was great. life couldn't have been better. I had a cool job. I had fallen in love. I was planning to get married. And then, you know, something happened. A small incident. And, you know, when I talk about the messy journey, I find that in my life, and I imagine in your life, there have been moments which kind of make you pause and reflect. So we had just sold our first ever sponsorship for the channel in India. It was a huge success. We were driving home from the kind of fancy corporate office in our air-conditioned car to our five-star hotel in Bombay. And for anyone who's been in Bombay, you know that there's a lot of poverty. In those days, actually, you had to drive through the slums, and you actually saw a lot of poverty. Now they have these flyovers, so, you know, you don't even see them anymore. But we had to drive through the slums, and in many ways, you become immune to it. I'll be honest. So this day, four or five of us were driving in a car. We actually had our bottle of champagne celebrating this big first sponsorship. And we found ourselves stuck in traffic. And this is something that's pretty normal in Bombay and most big cities these days. And so, you know, we sat in the traffic. But this time, we were literally inching along. We just wouldn't move. So something was going on. We didn't know what was going on. It took us about an hour, hour and a half to get to the area that was causing this traffic jam. And as we approached, we saw a group of children. These were young kids. They were the poorest of the poor kids. They were in kind of no shoes. You could see the malnutrition in their stomach, you know, kind of tattered clothes. And we saw them, and they were happy, and they were kind of standing in the street blocking all the traffic. And so as we inched along slowly, we kind of looked to see what was going on. And we saw that they were mesmerized by a roadside stall. And as we got to the stall, we saw that there was a TV hanging in the stall. And by wires, MTV was there with American kids grinding to hip-hop music on the beach. Everyone in my car began to cheer because this was a double success. We had literally just sold our first sponsorship, and literally we were reaching every corner of the planet. And while everyone in my car began to cheer, my heart stopped. And I thought, oh my God, what am I doing? What am I doing? You know, I had the dream job, and I still credit that with so much of kind of the opportunities I've had in my life. But suddenly I went back to this question, how can I serve? And for me, this wasn't the way. So I made a transition. I was still, you know, very young. My husband and I got married, and I realized, like, I kind of started to get clarity on what I didn't want to do, but honestly, I had no idea what I did want to do. So I call it the messy journey. Because that really is what it is. You know, sometimes we feel like we're on a path, we're feeling healthy, we're feeling connected to people, and then something happens that takes us off, or many things happen that take us off, and then we have to reconnect. And so for me, what happened is, you know, my husband and I got married, we came back for business school, and I had many different job opportunities. And, you know, I was kind of going along. Now, I had said earlier that the world of my father really wasn't my world. You know, most people who came to my father in the old days, you know, had been diagnosed with a disease, were going through a divorce, had lost a job, someone had died. And so I often found that, you know, that was the journey into self-exploration. It's changed a bit today because meditation's become so common, but it was usually some traumatic event that got people to start exploring who they were and what they wanted. And really, I had never had that before. On the morning of 9/11, the phone rang at 6:30, and it was my dad on the other end of the line. I was actually 5 months pregnant. My dad was sobbing hysterically, because he had just made an emergency landing, I think in Detroit, and had seen the first plane crash. And while we were on the phone, the second plane crashed. Now, aside from just being upset, my dad thought my brother was on one of the planes. So it took us 2 to 3 hours to kind of find where my brother was, connect with him. Meanwhile, my mom was on a plane coming from London. And so they turned around. And as you all remember that morning, none of us had any idea what was going on. So I was someone who had always dreamt of becoming a mom, like all the excitement and the magic and, you know, finding my purpose in being a mother. And 2 days after 9/11, I was going for a walk on the beach and I ended up fainting because just from stress. And I found myself sitting in the hospital and being monitored, you know, listening to my baby's heartbeat and suddenly feeling extreme fear and anxiety and uncertainty. And I'm wondering, why am I bringing this child into this planet of a lot of suffering and hate? That became the turning point that began my journey of self-exploration. Really, for the first time in my life, I was 30, I asked myself, who am I? Where do I come from? What are the deepest values that I cherish, that I want to pass on to my daughters? I often say, like, I kind of found my voice in becoming a mother, but it was actually in really going back to this question of what are my intents as a mother? How can I serve myself and my children on this journey that we have together? And that was my first book. It was actually called 100 Promises to My Baby, which was my intentions as a mother. And I became a mom. I started doing a lot of consulting projects and trying to find this balance between motherhood and work. I've had, fortunately, some successes, a lot of failures. I'm an entrepreneur by nature, and I'm always trying something new. And, life kind of continued. I kind of felt like, okay, you know, I have my kids, I'm working. And a few years ago, I started teaching meditation more. And a few years ago, I was speaking to an audience of women. It was probably about 50 women. And I was talking about balance and teaching them how to meditate. And I found that while I was having this conversation with all of these women about being present, I was having a parallel conversation in my head, which went like this. I can't believe I had that chocolate chip cookie and double macchiato before getting on stage. I feel so wired. I have to go pick up the dry cleaning, get the dog food, and oh my God, I forgot to put in the permission slip for my daughter's field trip. And I realized, like, I was having this kind of complete drama over here while everyone else was listening intently. So I decided, because I was like kind of overwhelmed by my internal conversation, I decided let everyone there meditate. So I had them all close their eyes. And I kind of stood on stage and like dealt with my own drama. It's a great trick, by the way. And I stood on stage, everyone's eyes were closed, and I really looked at my life. And, you know, at this stage, my kids were about 10 and 8, and really my life was crazy. I was running around all day long. I had a never-ending to-do list. At the end of the day, I was exhausted, but if you asked me what I had done, I wouldn't even know. I had, you know, my diet was off. I wasn't moving. And really, it became one of those points again in my life where I was like, okay, I need to make a change. So I literally made a decision while on stage with everyone else meditating that I was going to explore what balance meant for me. So that began this journey of my book. It is called Living with Intent, My Somewhat Messy Journey to Purpose, Peace, and Joy, because messy is very important there. And I am very fortunate. You know, I got to tap into great teachers. I went and spoke to people like Marianne Williamson and Andrew Weil, Eckhart Tolle. In my head, I thought, okay, you know, who do I really admire in terms of what she's doing? And it was Carol Stern, who's the president of UNICEF. So I set up a meeting to go and meet her in New York, and I'll never forget, I was so prepared and nervous to go and meet her. And when I went into her office, she was totally kind of frazzled because she was leaving to go on a trip to Rwanda, I think. But her son had forgotten his homework. And so she was like trying to coordinate with her husband, getting the homework there. And I realized, like, taking a deep breath and being like, oh my God, she's a mess just like me. It's fantastic. So, that began the journey of this book. And what I'd like to do is just get into what I call the path to intent. And then we're just going to do an exercise, actually, to kind of make this more practical. So I use the acronym INTENT, another trick for anyone who wants to write or kind of share content. My dad has the 7 spiritual laws of success or the 4 agreements. So acronyms and numbers always work. And I came up with basic concepts. So I is for incubate, N is for notice, T is for trust, E is for express, N is for nurture, and T is for take action. So the first step, and we're going to end later with a meditation. First step is to be quiet, to incubate. We are so busy all the time running around and our mind is racing all the time. When my dad started to talk about meditation and the mind-body connection 30 years ago, he was considered the East Asian witch doctor who sold snake oil. Now, research is showing that meditation and mindfulness techniques really have very practical health benefits, physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual. And so we can't skip, I feel often, the need to find quiet. It may be through meditation, it may be through your runs, it may be through yoga, it may be through walking in nature, but finding time to be quiet. And I chose this word incubate because for me it represented that sometimes it takes time. Sometimes we don't know what we want. Sometimes we just need, when we have a baby, it's not like the baby's suddenly there. It takes 9 months to incubate a child. An intent is like a seed. We plant a seed in the ground, and then we put the dirt on it, we water it, we let the sun and nature take time. Often we don't know the beautiful blossom or tree or flower it's going to become. But we trust that in planting the seed, something will come. So incubate is really that step of tapping into silence. And we'll go through a meditation. Notice. So I'm one of those people who's always on a diet, who's always like trying the latest juice cleanse or going to exercise classes with my friends. And so I made a shift. I started instead to notice the messages that my body was sending me. I, at that time in my life, I had a lot of body pain. I was tired all the time. And I started to just notice how food affected, my physical and emotional well-being. I also noticed my internal dialogue. So here's another game that my dad used to make my brother and I do when we were kids. He would make us go through a day, an entire day, where we were not allowed to criticize, condemn, or complain. It was called the 3 C's. And, of course, my brother would, keep nudging me, and, there were many, many things to complain about. But I challenge all of you, when you go home, maybe tomorrow, not in this great day today, but tomorrow morning when you're back at home managing everything, spend 1 hour trying not to criticize, condemn, or complain, either vocally or even in your mind. And what you will begin to notice is how your internal dialogue affects your external reality. So my internal dialogue was, I'm tired, I'm overwhelmed, I'm exhausted, I'm frustrated. And so obviously that was what was happening in my life. Notice is also noticing the people, the places, and the circumstances we come across every day. So, often we're so focused on our end goal that we don't even notice the person sitting next to us who could be part of our journey. Or the person we run into in an elevator, or the friend who calls, when we've been thinking of them. So noticing is also noticing kind of these places that we find ourselves in, the people we connect with, and seeing opportunity in every encounter. So, and now we'll get into this exercise. So after my moment on stage, I ended up, we were going home for the weekend to my parents. My parents live in San Diego. And, as was typical that evening, my mom was cooking Indian food. My kids were watching a movie. My husband had gone for a run. And my dad was sitting on Twitter. And so I decided, You know what? Let me talk to my dad. Like, I just had this moment on stage. Now, in my family, when anyone has a problem, we go to my mom. No one goes to my dad. The rest of the world may go to my dad, but we go to my mom. So as my dad was sitting out at the computer, I went and sat with my father, and I said, you know, Papa, I want to talk to you. So my dad was probably in mid-tweet, and he said, yeah. And so I said, you know, I'm finding that I'm stressed. I'm overwhelmed. And my dad, like, kind of paused and looked at me, and then I saw utter panic in his eyes, and he started to look for my mom to come and deal with me. And I said, no, Papa, it's okay. There's nothing majorly wrong. I'm just feeling out of balance. And I literally watched my father go from utter panicked father mode to take a deep breath and go to Deepak Chopra mode and be like, okay, I can handle this. So he then walked me through the work of Dr. Dan Siegel, who's a neuroscientist in Santa Monica, actually, where I live, and has done some great books, and really looks at the neural connections in our brain and what does it take to have a healthy lifestyle. And so Dr. Siegel has a healthy mind-body platter. And then my dad and I, though, sat and on a piece of paper came up with what I call the balance wheel, and that's what I'd like to take you through right now. And this for me was a very practical way to take my feeling of feeling totally overwhelmed with my life and breaking it down into pieces that I could really kind of reflect on and start setting intents to make change. So what I'd like to do right now is actually go through this balance wheel together. So I'm actually going to ask you, for now, to put your phones down, put away your pads of paper and pens, and just sit comfortably. All right? And it's often helpful to do this exercise with your eyes closed. So if you are comfortable, and you don't need to, but if you're comfortable, may I suggest that you close your eyes. And I'd like you to just take a deep breath in and out. And another breath in and out. Now, keeping your eyes closed, I want you to listen to questions. I'm going to ask maybe about 10 questions. When I ask the questions, I want you to just feel, try not to intellectualize, but feel the question. So, for some people, it's easy to do it on a scale of 1 to 10. 1 is I'm really struggling in this area, and 10 is I'm thriving in this area. Or you can just think of, am I struggling, surviving, thriving, but really feel the answer. Okay? So, another deep breath, in and out. And the first question, do I feel rested? Do I feel rested? And again, am I struggling, surviving, or thriving? Do I get enough sleep at night? Do I get enough sleep at night? Do I eat healthy, nutritious foods? Do I eat healthy, nutritious foods? Do I move enough? Do I move enough? And again, struggling, surviving, or thriving? Do I have healthy relationships in my family? Do I have healthy relationships in my family? Do I have healthy relationships with friends in my workplace, in my community? Do I feel financially secure? Do I feel financially secure? Do I like what I do every day? Do I enjoy my work or what I do at home or in my community? Do I like what I do every day? Do I feel I get enough intellectual stimulation? Do I feel I get enough intellectual stimulation? Do I have fun? Do I have fun? Do I laugh? Do I play? Do I feel like I have a sense of purpose? Do I feel like I have a sense of purpose? Do I feel spiritually connected? Do I feel spiritually connected? With your eyes closed, now take a deep breath in and out. And with the next breath in and out, let's just kind of let go of what may have come up. So take a deep breath in and out. And when you're ready, you can gently open your eyes. So sometimes we just need to have a little quiet and touch base and connect. And for many people, this brings tears, it may bring anxiety, it may bring questioning. And for some people, it may kind of say, okay, you know, I'm okay. What this did for me is I realized in kind of feeling just overwhelmed with my life that there were actually areas that I was doing okay. You know, I've never had a problem sleeping. You know, I'm always struggling with my kind of food and diet. I have good relationships and enjoy my work. But for me, I realized I was totally lacking intellectual stimulation. You know, I was so busy kind of running around all day and then on Facebook checking everyone else's status that I didn't have time to read or delve into poetry or things that fed my soul. I didn't have fun anymore. I just didn't have fun. Like, I wasn't laughing. And that really kind of made me think. This exercise just kind of helps you kind of take the big picture and maybe think of one or two areas. Maybe today just choose one area where you felt you were struggling or you could do better, and just tackle that first, okay? Micro intents. We don't have to change everything in our life, but we can change one thing at a time. So hopefully that helps you kind of just have a sense of where you are right now. So that was N. T is for trust. And this is really hard. It was hard for me. So trust is trusting that when we ask ourselves, what do I want, that we trust the answer. You know, I often, when I think, oh, what do I want? I'll think, you know, a best-selling book, being on the speaking circuit, money. But then if I really ask myself, what do I want? You know, I want to feel connected. Right now, my children, it's such a magical time. I want to be with them. And so we can't always, you know, on a daily basis do what we really want. But let's at least know what we want. Because when we know what we want and we trust the answers, we'll start making choices to live more aligned with those. So trust is also trusting the universe. Trusting that, you know, other people are there to support me. Trusting that, you know, maybe I can ask someone for help and they'll be willing to help. So this actually was a hard one for me, but it's so important. E is for express. So I feel really strongly that we need to express our intents. You know, when I wrote my first book, 100 Promises to My Baby, I went back to this concept of intention. And my dad actually guided me to do this exercise where I'd write a promise, basically write an intent. And I found that every time I had to write something, it actually helped me really crystallize a thought. And so when we express our intents or when we express our deepest desires, we actually create a ritual by which we say, this is important to me. We put a stake in the ground. We take responsibility for it. And in doing that, we also then kind of create potentially community. So, you know, I do have this app called intent.com where people are stating their intents. I don't think you need to do it on social media, but I think that if you do it even personally for yourself to actually write down your intents, write down your deepest desires, and then maybe burn it or keep it in your wallet or, you know, let go of it, but like really just putting an intention out there helps you take responsibility and say, you know what, this is important to me, and feel more empowered in taking the journey. So another exercise, which is in the book, but we're not going to go through with this, is I did this mind map. Basically, you know, as I said before, I kind of realized, like, you know, I didn't even know anymore what made me happy. You know, I remember what made me happy 20 years ago, but what makes me happy now? And so this is really an exercise where you just kind of, again, go quiet, think what makes you happy, and then think about random things. So for me, it was things like good food, spending time with my family and my friends, travel, reading good books, and you first start to just fill in the bubbles. And so actually it was quite amazing to me to kind of really think about what makes me happy right now. So I would encourage you to do that, and we'll come back to this mind map in a few minutes. The next N is for nurture. So this, ladies, is so important. This is about being gentle with ourselves, letting go of guilt. Boy, I feel guilty all the time. I'm guilty if I'm not at school doing the St. Patrick's Parade tea, or if I'm at work and I'm not at school, you know? And so for me, guilt, saying it's okay, being self-forgiving, asking for help, learning to say no. Again, I'm one of those people, I always feel like, oh yeah, I'll say yes. And then that just stretches me. So nurture really became actually my favorite chapter that I wrote in my book. And the reason this was is, you know, I decided to go to India to take care of my elderly grandparents. So in my family, we all take turns to go to India. And my grandparents were older at that time. And so it became my turn to go to India. And so, you know, I went to India thinking, oh, look at what a great grandchild I am, going to take care of my grandmother. My mom was taking care of my kids. And the first night when I got to India, I went to sleep and the fan was on. I woke up like an hour later and the fan was off. The next time I woke up, the air conditioning was on, but I had a blanket on me. The next time I woke up, there was a glass of water next to me. And I realized that all night long, my grandparents were coming in and making sure I was okay. And after, like, who does that? Who gets taken care of like that? And in the morning, my grandfather came with the newspaper and a cup of tea. And I had this week where I was like totally taken care of. I was fed. I went for walks with my grandfather every day. My grandmother cooked all my favorite food. And you know, at 40 years old, I was like being totally nurtured. And I realized I came back like a different person. Of course, like within an hour, I was back in my crazy life. But the realization that we have to take care of ourselves or let ourselves be taken care of, and that doesn't happen often, not everyone gets to have their grandparents take care of them still, but it was such a gift for me. And so it really stressed the importance of self-care, because we're so busy taking care of our children, of our parents, of our community, of our coworkers, that we really forget to take care of ourselves. And so I really cannot stress enough to find, even if it's moments where we can take care and nurture ourselves. One of the things I did, and I'll come back to that, actually I'll come back to that right now, is taking action. So, you know, I grew up in this world of self-help where everyone says, oh, well, if you set your intent, it will happen. I actually don't believe that. I believe that there is a time for smart goals and there is a time for taking action. And again, it doesn't have to be melodramatic action. Like for me, this was kind of how I filled up my what makes me happy wheel. And when I came back from India, I started to really look at that and think, okay, what makes me happy? Like I was lacking intellectual stimulation and I love friends. So the exercise here is to start connecting the circles. So for me, I connected friends and intellectual stimulation and I thought, okay, what can I do? What can I actually do? And so I called a few friends and I said, let's start a book club. It's the simplest thing. We meet every 6 to 8 weeks. Most of the time, none of us have read the book, but it gives us a chance to get together, get a bottle of wine, and just like have an excuse to have fun, to connect. And yeah, once in a while, we will read the book. Of course, we never talk about the book when we meet, but I connected good food, family, and travel. And my husband and I decided to take a trip to Vancouver with our kids and eat at our favorite Indian restaurant. We're obsessed with food. And, you know, it just so happened Adele was performing there as well. So then we got tickets for that. So, like, doing simple things sometimes, it doesn't have to be, like, change your life. But sometimes I cannot tell you how much joy the book club gives me. Like, it's kind of amazing, actually, and shocking. And so there is sometimes just small things that we can take action to improve our lives. So this is a phrase from the Upanishads. It says, you are what your deepest desire is. As is your desire, so is your intent. As is your intent, so is your will. As is your will, so is your deed. As is your deed, so is your destiny. And so sometimes we're struggling so hard to kind of figure out our purpose and, you know, how we can contribute, et cetera. But it just begins with knowing who we are and what our deepest desires are. So with that, I'd actually like to teach you a meditation, a very simple meditation. You know, in the old days when I talk about meditation, no one in the room had ever meditated. Now, some people have meditated. Lots of people do yoga. It's like kind of amazing because, as I said earlier, when my dad started talking about this stuff, it was such kind of craziness. And of course, so many people now have done the Oprah Chopra 21-day meditation challenges, which is like amazing. But I'm going to give you a very simple meditation that you can do anywhere, anytime. And we'll do it together, and it will be short, but it will kind of give you something practical to do. And the other thing I like to do is at the end of the meditations, I just ask a few questions, and you don't have to do this when you do your regular meditations, but the reason I ask the questions is it gets back to what are our deepest desires. So again, I'm going to guide you through the whole thing. So the meditation that we're going to do together is a sound-based meditation. So often the way our mind works is we have a thought, it triggers another thought, another thought, another thought, another thought, another thought. So we're constantly, our mind is racing. In this meditation, we're going to use a very simple word or sound to just break the cycle of thoughts. So in these traditions, they're called mantras. Now, man translates to mind, and tra is the root for instrument or trident. So a mantra is an instrument of the mind. Many people have heard words like om, etc. But today, we are going to use the word I am. So I, A-M, M. Very simple. Okay, now if you listen to the phonetics of I am or the vibrational energy of I am, it's actually similar to om, amen, Abraham, Amma, Mama. So there are certain sounds, we call them primordial sounds. And these are the sounds of nature, they're healing. So think of the wind blowing through the trees or the sound of the waves on the ocean or children's laughter. Different sounds kind of make us feel different things. So I am is really just a soothing sound. It's I am, the infinite to the finite. Om. Amma, mama. So we're going to just use the word I am. And What I'm going to ask you to do, I'll first explain it, is we'll again sit comfortably. I'll have you close your eyes, and I'm going to have you mentally repeat the words, I am. Now, this is what will happen. You'll say, I am, all internally. I am, I am, I am. And then after 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 times, you'll think, oh God, I have to go to the bathroom. I'm so hungry. Why did I have that coffee? Gosh, I hope this gets over soon. And so you'll start, like, kind of your mind will start racing. That is normal and natural and exactly what your mind wants to do, and that's totally fine. In meditation, we are not trying to empty our mind. We're just slowing down thoughts. So whenever you notice that your mind has wandered, which I said is completely normal and natural, just choose the words, I am, I am, I am. And naturally what happens without trying is your mind starts to settle, your thoughts start to settle. For some people, and we'll just do this for maybe, 5 minutes total, but like 2 minutes of the quiet time and then I'll start asking questions. For some people, it will seem like infinity. And for some people, it's going to fly by like that. Now, I also want to remind you that there's no end goal to meditation. When I meditate, and I'm a very irregular meditator, I like to tell people, actually. When I meditate, sometimes it's like 10 minutes of bliss and peace and quiet, and then sometimes it's 10 minutes of torture where I just want to get up and I think this is a waste of time, but I know that giving myself and my mind that 10 minutes of release, even if it's 10 minutes of constant thought, is actually helping me mentally and neurologically. So I suggest to people, you know, many meditation teachers will say, oh, you have to do half an hour in the morning and half an hour in the evening. That's actually what they teach at the Chopra Center. I haven't done 2 meditations, like, for half an hour, like, in 20 years. What I do is I find 15 to 20 minutes once a day. For me, it's usually in the 2 to 3 time period because, you know, I'm working all day and then I start getting into child mode. So I like to kind of find that time to just 10 to 15 minutes. I do it in carpool line, and I'm not joking. I literally taught my friend how to meditate like a month ago in carpool line because we were like, you know what? This was like some quiet time that we had with each other. So this meditation is very simple, and I sometimes encourage people, do it in a busy airport. You don't even have to have a quiet place, okay? So again, let's put everything away, and I'd like everyone to sit comfortably and take a deep breath. In and out, and I'd like you to just mentally repeat the words, I am. No particular rhythm or pace, whatever feels comfortable. I am. I am. And when your mind drifts away from the words, just gently come back to the words, I am. And we're just going to be quiet for a minute or so. Now keep your eyes closed, and you can stop repeating the words, I am. And with your eyes closed, let's take a deep breath in and out. Once again, I'm going to ask a few questions. Don't feel the need to intellectually answer these questions. Rather, experience the answers and let go. So, first question. Who am I? Who am I? What do I want? What do I want? How can I serve? But let's begin with, how can I serve myself? And now, how can I serve How can I serve my loved ones, my community, my world? Now shift your attention to your heart, and I want you to think about what you are grateful for today. What am I grateful for today? And we'll take another breath in and out. And whenever you're ready, gently open your eyes. So I want to stress that first, the meditation can be really simple, just the I am meditation. But second, once in a while, it's good to ask questions. And I often have felt uncertain about the answers, and that's okay. Because it's in asking the questions that we start to hear the hints of our deepest desires. And then, you know, everything plays out after that. So I'm going to end with a quick story. And I did this as a TEDx talk. And it's actually one of my favorite encounters in the meetings that I did for my book. So I had come up with a list of people that I wanted to interview. And I reached out to Eckhart Tolle. Some of you may know Eckhart Tolle from his books, The Power of Now, and Oprah is a big fan of his. And so I thought, you know, if there's anyone who knows about what purpose is, you know, he'd be great. So I reached out to his office, and they came back to me and said, you know, he often won't meet people, but he's a fan of your dad's, and so of course he'll meet with you. But we scheduled something 9 months in advance. I think I reached out to him in June, and they were like, oh, in February we can meet. So I had a lot of time to read his books, to watch his YouTube videos, to prepare for this, for me, very big interview. And finally, the morning of the interview came, and I was flying from LA to San Francisco to go and meet him. So I woke up at 4:30 in the morning to get my early morning flight, and I woke up that morning with the worst allergies I've ever had in my life. I was sneezing nonstop, my throat was dry, my eyes were runny. I was such a mess that I thought, oh my God, I can't sneeze all over Eckhart Tolle, it will be so embarrassing, that I almost decided to cancel the interview. But it had taken so long to get it that I decided, you know what, I'm gonna just stuff myself with cold medicine and drink a lot of coffee and deal with it. So I decided, I'm going to go up to San Francisco. I picked up my phone on the side of my bed, and there was a text message from my father. And the text message said, good luck with the interview. Remember, he is always in the now. So I was like, what? What is he talking about? So I was like, whatever. I got ready, headed to the airport, flew up to San Francisco, landed, and there was another text message from my dad saying, in the now with a smiley face. I headed to the hotel, and in the lobby I met Eckhart's assistant, and he said, you know, thank you so much for coming. Again, he stressed Eckhart doesn't take interviews, but he loves the concept of intention. I just need to let you know that he has 15 minutes, so I'm gonna take you upstairs. You sit with him, I'll knock on the door, and then you get up and go. So I like smiled and said, oh, thank you, it's so sweet. And suddenly my heart's beating fast, my hands are sweating. I had prepared 9 months for this interview, and I had like 10 questions. And I started to think, oh my God, 15 minutes, how am I gonna do this in 15 minutes? But I was like, oh, okay, fine. So we got into the elevator, and my phone kind of tinged again, and my dad again, smiley face in the now, and I was so annoyed, I was like, shut up, and I put the phone off. And we went to Eckhart's room, knocked on the door. And when he opened the door, I have to tell you, it was so peaceful. He had this amazing, relaxed energy, and all of my anxiety, which had built up in the elevator ride, I just took a deep breath, and he kind of reminded me of my grandfather, and he was so sweet. So we went inside and we sat down. I put my phone right next to me, looking at the time, very cognizant. And I started to tell him about my book and my project, and that I was really trying to understand intention and purpose. That took 2 to 3 minutes. And then he kind of, smiled. And so then finally he said, intention is the most powerful force in the universe. So I sat forward, my pen at my pad of paper, ready for the secrets of the universe to be revealed to me. And then he stopped. So I stopped. And then he said, "Do you hear those bells?" So I was like, "What?" And so then I started to listen, and there were church bells ringing. So I was like, "Yeah." And he said, "These church bells, they remind me of when I was a young kid and I used to work in a church and these church bells would ring, and this takes me back to that time." So I smiled, great, but I need to know about intention. And then he said, "Let's listen to the bells." So I was like, okay. And I looked at my clock, we're 6-7 minutes into my 15 minutes, but I was like, okay. And so these bells rang. And they rang, and they rang, and the damn bells would not stop ringing. And I was looking at my clock, we're 8, 9, 10 minutes into my time. It was obviously 12 o'clock, and the stupid bells wouldn't stop ringing. And Eckhart sat there with this smile on his face, enjoying the bells. I was getting totally anxious, and then I remember the exact moment I decided, I got to let go. I got to shift from that goal orientation to my intention to be with this man. And so I remember that moment that I let go. I took a deep breath and I was present. And I sat listening to the bells with Eckhart Tolle. And I felt peaceful and happy and whole and connected. And there was a knock on the door. And it was his assistant, and the time was up. So I got up, put my hands together to leave, and then Eckhart said, no, sit down. And he then spent an hour and a half with me talking about purpose and intention and how we can serve. And at one point I said to him, I grew up in this family where I was taught to ask every day, how can I serve? And I said, honestly, that stresses me out because I don't know how. I'm a soccer mom. I do my business, and then I drive my kids from activity to activity. And he said something to me, which I want to share with you in ending. He said, "It is the everyday people who do extraordinary things." And I call them the frequency holders. They are the people who are increasing the frequency of this planet. And so never underestimate the power of being a soccer mom. But when you are doing it, do it with purpose. Do it with joy. Do it with passion. And then you will be living with intent. So thank you very much. And have a wonderful day.
Ladies, let's give Malika Chopra another warm, wonderful round of applause. She will be signing her books in the exhibit hall, and I encourage you to go if you have questions, you want to get a copy of her book, and be in the moments today. Listen to the bells. Thank you. Have a wonderful day.